we're going to discuss the lessons of Ruth, the lowly who are exalted. So we'll go to 1 Corinthians 1 again. Page 166 in the Old in the New Testament. New Testament, Esther. Other end of the book.
New
Testament. Turn it all over. There you go, 166. That's all right, Melania. You just get there. Find a helper. And we're going to read 17 through 29. Would you want to read that, Wendy?
Where? 17. In what chapter?
Chapter 1, verse 17 to 29.
For Christ sent me not to be immersing, but to be telling the good news, not with wisdom of discourse, lest void should be made the cross of the Christ. For the discourses which concerneth the cross, unto them indeed who are perishing is foolishness. But unto them who are being saved, unto us, it is God's power. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning will I set aside. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Hath not... Is that Elohim?
Yahweh.
Hath not Yahweh made foolish the wisdom of the world? For seeing that in the wisdom of Yahweh, the world through its wisdom did not get to know Yahweh, Yahweh was well pleased through the foolishness of the thing proclaimed to save them that could believe. Seeing that both Jews for signs do ask and Greeks for wisdom do seek, whereas we proclaim a Christ who hath been crucified, unto Jews indeed an occasion of stumbling and unto Gentiles foolishness, but unto the called themselves, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, Yahweh's power and Yahweh's wisdom. Because Yahweh's foolish thing is wiser than men, and Yahweh's weak thing mightier than men. For be looking at the calling of you, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many powerful, not many high-born. On the contrary, the foolish things of the world hath Yahweh chosen, that he might put to shame them who are wise. And the weak things of the world hath God as Yahweh chosen, that he might put to shame the things that are mighty. And the low-born things of the world, that the things that are despised hath Yahweh chosen. And the things that are not, that the things that are he might bring to naught. So that no flesh should boast before Yahweh.
So Esther's teaching was just great because David was the lowborn. And when they went to look for the sons of Jesse, they didn't even include him. So, I mean, that's really like a non-entity. Do you have anybody else around? Oh, yeah, we got the little guy. Where's he? He's out there, you know, feeding the chickens. And that would be the sheep. The people took care of the sheep were usually the menial task. And that was David. And we're going to see that's also with Ruth. But there are highborns, which we're going to discuss. But before we do that, let's go to Hannah and see this, the prayer of Hannah on 1 Samuel 2, verse 1. So this would kind of give us an introduction into Ruth.
290. Well, it reminds me, too, you know, our Lord and Savior, our King, was born in a manger with a bunch of... Yeah. You know, animals, you know, yeah. You know, just how he came into the world is just the same thing.
And who were his parents? Mighty and noble?
Yeah.
What kind of education did he have? Not wasn't the Sanhedrin, wasn't a Pharisee, wasn't a scribe. You know, yeah, so for, and not from Jerusalem.
What
city? He was from Galilee. Mm-hmm. You know, God forsaken Galilee, that's like Hayesville. Yeah. For us. But it is, you know, like Wichita is supposed to be the big city, and you have Cheney, I guess. You just say it's Cheney. And, yeah, and you know, so. I don't think we're going to have time to.
What chapter?
Chapter 2, verse 1.
What page?
290. That's
290. I'm sorry, honey. What's
that? I didn't get too much on here, but
Old Testament or New Testament?
Then prayed Hannah and said, as she bowed to Yahweh, my heart hath leaped for joy in Yahweh, my horn is exalted in Yahweh, my mouth is opened wide over my foes, because I rejoice in thy salvation. There is none holy like Yahweh, nay, there is none except thee, nor is there a rock like our Elohim. Do not multiply words so lofty, lofty, nor let arrogance proceed from your mouth, for an ale of knowledge is Yahweh, and for himself are great doings made firm. The bow of the mighty is dismayed, while the fainting are girded with strength. And so we're going to see the mighty and the noble going back and forth here also. The sated have for bread taken higher, but the famished has left off their toil. So that the barren hath given birth unto seven, while she that hath many sons languish. Yahweh does kill and make alive, taken down to Sheol and bringeth up. Yahweh maketh poor and enricheth, layeth low yet exalteth, raises from the dust the poor, from the dunghill uplifted the needy, to give them a dwelling with nobles and a throne of glory to make them inherited. That's what happened to Hannah, and that's what happened to Ruth. So we see that the noble and the wise, but there is some very noble individuals that Christianity doesn't know about as a whole. And that one is Isaac Newton. So I've been putting these on Facebook, and most of them have no idea that Isaac Newton was even a Christian. And so these people I'm going to mention are non-Trinitarians. That's why they are not recognized. Mm-hmm. Because actually that's an enemy to the church. Mm-hmm. And it's an enemy to science. Mm-hmm. But here's what Isaac Newton says about atheism. Opposite to godliness is atheism in profession and idolatry in practice. Atheism is so senseless and odious to mankind that it never had many professors. Now think of that. We're teaching Darwinism and everything else in our castles of
learning.
And he's saying it's all odious. Can it be by accident that all birds, beasts, and men have their right side and left side alike shaped, and just two eyes and no more on either side of the face, and just two ears on either side of the head, and a nose with two holes and no more between the eyes, and one mouth under the nose, and either two four legs or two wings or two arms on the shoulder and two legs on the hips, one on either side and no more? So you're looking at the deformities, you know, you could have three legs over here and one over here. Mm-hmm. Whence arises uniformity in all their outward shapes that from the counsel and contrivance of an author? Whence is it that the eyes of all sorts of living creatures are transparent to the very bottom? And the only transparent members is in the body, having on the outside a hard, transparent skin, and within transparent juices with the crystalline lens in the middle, and a pupil before the lens, all of them so truly shaped and fitted for vision that no artist can mend them. Did blind chance know that there was light? And what was it? Refraction? And fit the eyes of all creatures after the most curious manner to make use of it? These and such like considerations always have and ever will prevail with mankind to believe that there is a being who made all things and has all things in his power and who is therefore to be feared. And so this is, you know, Isaac Newton. And we also have John Locke, which I don't think I'm going to have time to read his. I'll just kind of introduce it. So John Locke, these guys are from England, but so John Locke, where we got a lot of our Constitution from, and he actually did the Constitution for, I think, North or South Carolina. A brilliant individual. Since God shows himself to us at present everywhere, and as it were, forces himself upon the eyes of men, as such as the fixed course of nature, now is by the frequent evidence of miracles in time past, I assume there will be no one to deny the existence of God. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. And look at today. Provided he recognizes either the necessity for some rational account of our life, or that there is a thing that deserves to be called virtue or vice. Because if there is no God, then there's nothing good and there's nothing bad. It's all relative. There is no virtue and there is no vice. And he goes on and on. And John Milton, who did Paradise Lost, was a famous poet. And so we're seeing, he's all the mighty and noble that you're never going to hear about because they actually read the scriptures.
Yeah.
You know, instead of going to the theological seminaries, they read the scriptures and found out, hey, this is all true. But this other stuff these Christians teach is a lie. So now we'll go to, we'll give you some introduction about Ruth, and this is very important. She was a Moabite, which is a non-Hebrew. And Bollinger does a good thing on the notes with Ruth. We've been studying it. And this on Genesis 12:3, we won't go there, but he says, the Gentile or the non-Jew can only be blessed through the seed of Abraham or Abraham. So Ab means father, as was Esther's husband. So Esther was a Hebrew, and the king, Cambyses, was not. So he was blessed because of Esther. Ruth is only blessed because of Boaz. And so you see two nations, people of the nation, being blessed because they hooked up with the seed of Abraham. Ruth is read at the Feast of Pentecost. The names, and we're going to explain the names. The name of her husband was Elimelech, and that means my God is king. And Naomi is really Naomi, my delight or my pleasant one. Her son, these are very interesting, Machlon, which means sick. Her next one reads Kilion, which means pining or failing.
And who's that?
This is her kid. Naomi's son. Naomi. And they're both going to die.
Really?
Yeah. And we're going to find out. Ruth's name is actually pronounced to this person, Root, like R-O-O-T, Root.
Oh, Esther knew.
Friendship or beauty is what it means. And Obed, which is the outcome of all this, means serving. And Boaz means fleetness.
Means what?
Fleetness. So we'll find out what Yahweh says about Moabites. And so we'll go to Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 and 4.
The descendants of Lot.
Pardon me?
Moab, the descendants of Lot.
Yeah, I do. Good point. So, number AB is the Hebrew word for father. So Moab is my father. And that was from Lot's daughter. So Lot has his daughters actually had really sexual intercourse with Lot when he was drunk. They got him drunk and had sexual intercourse with him. And then you got Ammon was one tribe, and then that was one daughter, and the other one was Moab. Yeah. So most people would say Moab, but it's really Moab. Good point, Aaron. So we're going to look at Deuteronomy 23, verses 3. And we're going to learn a little bit about the Moabites. Verses 3 and 4. Okay, Melania, are you there? Why don't you read verses 3 and 4.
Neither an Amorite nor a Moabite shall enter unto the convocation of Yahweh. Even to the tenth generation shall none that belong to them enter in the convocation of Yahweh unto times age of Adam. Because they meet...
They met?
Not, what?
They met because they met?
They met you not with bread and water in the way when ye came forth out of Egypt, but hired against thee Balaam. Son of Beor.
Yeah, that's good. Beor.
Beor from Pethor of Mesopotamia.
To Cursi. Very good. That's good. So, but Bollinger points out this is in the masculine. So, no male Moabite could be in the convocation in the temple.
Well, a female could.
Yeah, so yeah. And as you point out, that. Okay, wow. That's interesting. We're going to learn about another word.
That's a Christ line.
Yeah. We're going to need another word called Gaal, which is kinsman redeemer. And we're going to find out what to do a part of a kinsman and thus to redeem his kin from difficulty or danger. So Gaal is used 21 times in the book of Ruth.
Could you spell it?
Yeah, it's G-A-A-L. And there's also Goel, which are related. And one will be translated redeem, and the other one is kinsman. So what's really nice is Rothrath's going to translate kinsman all the time. So we're going to see, what is this relationship of a Goel, which is a kinsman redeemer, which we're going to see at the end, Christ also was our kinsman redeemer.
Yeah.
And so we had been sold. So what a redeemer was is somebody, it says right here, do the part of a kinsman, and thus to redeem his kin from difficulty or danger. So people would sell their property because they were under bad times, or they had to sell their children because they were under bad times, or they had to sell themselves into slavery because they were under bad times. And so we all were sold under sin, and we're by nature children of wrath and death. And so we need a Goel, which is Yahushua, a kinsman redeemer, who came and paid the price to get us out of hock. So think about a redeemer as a pawn shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you put it in there, and it's not coming out until it's paid.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to Leviticus, and we'll learn about what Yahweh says about that. In Leviticus 25, verse 25. So this is all the prerequisite to understand what's going to happen in the book of Ruth. If you don't understand these things, you know, that their sons, one's named sick, and one's the other one is failing.
What if they named him after his dad?
I'm
sorry.
But it does give emphasis at
their
outcome. Page 152.
Sickly and bankrupt over here.
Yeah. There it is. But... let's just say, let's go to 26. Wait a minute, where did I say 25? I was in the wrong place. When thy brother waxeth poor, and so selleth aught of his possession, then may his kinsman that is near unto him come in and redeem that which is sold by his brother. So, with a Hebrew ever sold their land to another Hebrew, they always had a right to buy it back. And so, as with a pawn shop, it never expired. And so you never became sole owner of that because the people had the right to buy it back. And actually, what they call in Jubilee year, which is the 50 year, all of it was given back no matter what, because Yahweh's inheritance to people was absolute for family members. And let me start 25 again. When thy brother waxes poor, so sells aught of his possession, then may his kinsman, or Goel, that is near unto him, come in and redeem that which was sold by his brother. So we'll just stop right there and you can read more. That's going to be part of Ruth, the kinsman. Now, we have another part of Ruth, which is a widow who has no children, or no issue. That's Deuteronomy 25, verse 5. So what happens to a woman that has no children? And this is very important. People got to realize, I think, in my understanding, I would think, why Yahweh allowed multiple wives is because after the fall, women are very susceptible to ruin. And so if you had one person who could take care of five of them, and, you know, give them land and give them sons, and so, because if a woman can't have children, then there's no Social Security. Mm-hmm. I mean, her parents could die off, and then what is she going to do? Because she's not going to get the work and be able to do the things that men can do. And so by multiple wives, I think a lot of times what you're doing is you're actually saving women. Mm-hmm. And we don't need that today, but where was I? 25 verse 5. So that's just something that I would think about. Maybe I start.
Page 223.
Yeah. Better start at verse 5. Oh, I did. Oh, that's where I was. Okay, I was looking at a different verse. When brethren dwell together and one of them dieth, having no son, the wife of the dead shall not marry outside to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her unto him to wife, and to do for her as a husband's brother. And so I remember Dr. Verwell said, maybe it was John Lynn, you really got involved with your brother's wives. I mean, so before he got married, you're going to say, you better not die. All right, because I don't like the scenario of this person who hates my guts to marry him.
You better not die.
Yeah, you better not die. Because that's my duty is to do this. Now, you didn't have to, but this is behind that. And verse 6, and it shall be that only the firstborn, which she bears shall succeed in the name of his brother. So the firstborn carries on the dead person's name and their land. And who is dead, so shall his name not be wiped off from Israel. That's going to happen in Ruth. To glean, and to glean a field is to come back when something is cut and things are spilt. The poor people come and pick it up, and that's what they get to live on. It's called gleaning. And so we go into Leviticus 19 to see what Yahweh says about that.
I'm sorry, what?
19 verse 9. And very important to note, these are so crucial in today because Yahweh never told you to go off and feed this person for the rest of their life. And as today, with our welfare system. No, he says they're going to work, but here's what they're going to do. All right, so when you do your work, and be like Kevin, and so if he did his work and there was extra bricks, he'd just leave them. And then they would come and take his extra bricks and maybe try to do some occupation with them. And so with all of this, you think of the residual, instead of me just cleaning out everything, I'm going to leave behind things.
Leftovers.
Yeah, leftovers. I guess you could be, but work is always involved. So 19 verse 9.
Leviticus.
Yes, Leviticus 19 verse 9. And this is what you do with the poor people. And you want to read that, Isaiah?
And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly clear the border of thy field in
reaping.
Or shalt thou gather up the
gleaning
of thy harvest.
Keep going.
And thy vineyard shall not go over again. Nor gather every single grape for the poor and for the sojourner shall thou leave them. I, Yahweh, am your God.
That's it. So that was a requirement. And so the poor work. And so we're going to see that with Ruth. Another factor is the ephod. And we're going to find out that she picks up an ephod. And how much is an ephod? It is 6 gallons. So think of 6 gallon. Well, we got a 5 gallon bucket. Okay. And so she's going to come back with an ephod one day.
Wow.
And Naomi's going to really jump. Important things, two things. The barley harvest is where we're going to begin, was Passover time. The wheat harvest is Pentecost time. Huh. And so we're going to see both of those. Now, we'll begin with Ruth. Chapter 1. Ruth. Judges Ruth. So Joshua judges Ruth. And what a great, if you ever want to listen to this on the Word of Promise, it's really just fabulous. And what is it? 4 chapters.
Yeah.
Just read before you go to bed. It's 4 chapters. But it is so significant. Because as we see, Christ comes out of this. David comes out of this. Solomon comes out of this. I mean, it's just boom, 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 boom. Out of who? A Moabite. But a very special Moabite. So, Wendy, can you read verses? Or Elijah, verses.
What chapter?
There are some names there. I'll go ahead and read the first part. And it came to pass in the days when the judges administered justice. So we're looking at the period of judges. Boulanger thinks this was before Judges 1. And so we're looking at the period of Judges. And there was a famine in the land, and so a certain man went his way out of Bethlehem, Judah, who was also born in Bethlehem.
David.
Yeah, of Judah. David, and who else? Yahushua. Amen. Savior. So we're looking at Bethlehem, Judah. to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was, how you say that, is El, and instead of I, it would be like E-E, Elimelech.
Elimelech.
And the name of his wife was Naomi. Remember, his name means God is my king. Her name means, let me do that again, my delight or my pleasant one. And the name of the two sons was Machlon, and that means sick, and Kilion. And when you see the Ephraitis, that was another name for Bethlehem before it became Bethlehem.
Ephraites.
Huh. Out of Bethlehem, Judah. So they came into the country of Moab and remained there. And Elimelech, husband of Naomi, died, and she was left, she and her two sons. And they took them wives of the woman of Moab. The name of the one was Ophah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. And they also both died. I mean, this is really bad. And now you got three men who died. Machlon and Kilion. So the women were... And so sometimes the spelling is not even close. And so we go into the Hebrew, and it will, on an online Bible, it will pronounce it. You know, so that should be like K-I-L-L instead of C-H-I-L. So you guys say, where did you get the word kill on? But that's the way it's pronounced. So sometimes it's not even close. So the woman was bereaved of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose, she and her daughters-in-law, and returned out of the land of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that Yahweh had visited his people in giving unto them bread. We'll stop there. Now we go to verse 16. Okay, Elijah 16. Can you read 16 through 21?
Yes. And Ruth said, do not urge me to leave thee, to go back from following thee, for whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, and thy Elohim my Elohim. Where thou diest, I will die, and where I will be buried. So let Yahweh do to me, and so let him add, if death itself part me and thee.
Wow, I mean, this is a commitment. I mean, what a... And you can see why Yahweh brought her into the scene. Now, this is a great woman. Verse 18.
And when she saw that the bravely determined was she to go with her, and she ceased entreating her, so they two went their way unto the... and entered Bethlehem. And it came to pass when they entered Bethlehem that all the city was moved concerning them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? And she said unto them, do not call me Naomi, sweet. Call me Mara, bitter. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I was full when I departed, but empty am I brought back to Yahweh. Wherefore should ye call me Naomi? When Yahweh hath given answer against me, and the Almighty hath crushed me.
So this is a great analogy from, you're going to see Naomi crushed to Naomi exalted at the end. Fuller points that out. Now we go to chapter 2 and verses... Well, we're just going to read all of chapter 2. So, how about, let's see if I'll find a place for you, Esther. We'll find something that's easy to read. Tim or Wendy, you want to start reading? And we'll take turns.
Sure. I'll start off in 1 here. Now, Naomi had an acquaintance of her husband's, a man of great integrity of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz, and Ruth, the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, let me go, I pray thee, to the field, and glean ears of corn after him, in whose eyes I may find favor. And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she went her way and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And it had happened to her to light upon the portion of the field land belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. And lo, Boaz coming from Bethlehem, and he said unto the reapers, "Yahweh be with you." And they said unto him, "Yahweh bless thee." Then said Boaz unto this young man that was set over the reapers, "Who is that maiden?" And the young man that was set over the reapers answered and said, "The Moabitess maiden is she who came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab." And she said, "Let me glean, I pray thee, and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came in and hath continued from that time all the morning until just now, and hath not rested in the house for a little. Go ahead, Wendy.
And Boaz said unto Ruth, "Hearest thou not, my daughter? Do not go to glean in any other field, neither indeed shalt thou pass on from hence, but here shalt thou keep fast by my maidens. Thine eyes be on the field which they shall reap, and go thou after them. Have I not commanded the young men that they touch thee not? And when thou art athirst, then go unto the vessels and drink of what the young men shall draw." Then she fell upon her face and bowed herself to the ground and said unto him, "Wherefore have I found favor in thine eyes that thou shouldest take notice of me, seeing that I am a stranger?" And Boaz answered and said to her, "It hath been told me that all thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land of thy nativity, and come unto a people whom thou knewest not aforetime. Yahweh recompense thy deed, and let thy reward be full from Yahweh, the God of Israel, unto whom thou hast come to take refuge under his wings." And she said, "Let me find favor in thine eyes, my lord, for that thou hast comforted me, and for that thou hast spoken unto the heart of thy handmaid, though I be not as one of thine own handmaidens."
You want to stop? Hannah, you want to read 14 through 16?
Yeah. And Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Draw nigh hither and eat of thy bread, and dip thy morsel in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and there was reached to her parched corn, and she did eat and was satisfied, and left thereof remaining. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Even between the sheaves, let her glean, and reproach her not. Moreover, draw out for her from the bundles, and leave behind that she may glean it, and rebuke her not."
Very good. Okay, Esther, you want to read 17?
Yes.
So
the glean in the field into the evening, the bleat out that which she had gleaned, and there was about an
ephod
of barley, and she took it up and came to the city. And when her mother-in-law had seen what she had gleaned, she brought forth and gave her what had been left. Many after that, she was satisfied.
We'll stop there. So that's a bonanza. Okay, Isaiah, you want to read 19?
Just 19?
Mm-hmm.
And her mother-in-law said to her, "In what place hast thou gleaned today, and where hast thou thronged?"
Rock.
"May he took notice of thee, he blessed." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought. What?
Rot.
Rot. And said, "The name of the man with whom I brought today is Boaz.
Read 20.
Okay. Then said
Naomi
to her daughter-in-law, "Bless me he to Yahweh who hath not left off his loving kindness. This is
to the living and dead." I'm going to stop you for a minute. Now, why to the living and to the dead? Because her husband's dead, and she needs somebody to take his place for the family land to come back and repurchase the fields that her husband's family used to own. And so she's the living, her husband's the dead.
And he came from the same family as Boaz.
Yeah, the same kind of kinsman. And Naomi said to her, near to us is the man of our own kinsman, is he? And that's that Gaal, the kinsman. And Ruth, the Moabite, says, so you can think of going in her head, here's our potential redeemer, and he's probably a wealthy man. And Ruth, the Moabite, so now Naomi's life is looking up compared to being crushed by Yahweh. And you have to remember in the Old Testament, there was no Satan. And so to them, everything that happened, Yahweh was part of. Mm-hmm. And so it says Yahweh kills, Yahweh makes alive, and on, but we know that Yahweh has three attributes, and that's justice, righteousness, and loving kindness. So Yahweh has to obey his law of loving thy neighbor as thyself. So he can't kill somebody who didn't do anything wrong. Now, if they did something wrong and they did a capital punishment, yes, they should be put to death. But all of death was attributed to him.
Satan wasn't revealed to the New Testament.
Yeah, until the New Testament. And Yahushua made him apparent and shined the spotlight on demons. We didn't know anything about demons. We didn't know anything about spiritual messengers until Yahushua came on the scene.
All they knew was about the serpent in the garden.
That's about it. Yeah, so there's nothing else. Yahweh's just, whatever happened is Yahweh's allowing it to happen. And making it happen. Yeah, but there's no spiritual.
The cockroaches like,
There's no dark side. And like one person said, which could be some validity to it. He says if they would have told him about an adversary, what can they do about it? Yeah. They don't have the Holy Spirit. Yeah. You know, they don't have power to fight the invisible world. And so actually, it would probably be more hindrance than, well, here's why bad things go. And who are they? Well, they're around. They're working in different fields. And you're like, thanks.
It's like a virus without like somebody, a microscope.
You know, yeah, it's like telling Tim, you got worms, and you'll live with them. You'll be all right.
Yeah.
What? You can't do anything about it, but I just thought you'd let you know. I think it would have been better just to keep that to yourself. I was just living just fine. Okay. And 21. And Ruth the Moabite said, yay. Isn't it neat how Yahweh keeps saying the Moabites? Yeah. You know, because obviously she's not of Israel. Yay, for he said unto me, by my young men shall thou keep fast until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law. Now here it gets really, you know, matchmaking.
Yenta.
I have an idea.
Good, it is my daughter, and you're good looking, and you're a hottie. Ruth might have been, 20 or 30 years old, and Boaz might have been 50. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to see that. You're going to see there's a pretty big age difference. Family, this I can see it. Yep. I can see it. And Yahweh's probably putting that in her mind too, to be honest.
Hey, baby, you glean here often?
Yeah. And Naomi said unto Ruth, her daughter-in-law, good it is, my daughter, that thou go forth with his maidens, and that they meet thee not in any other field. So she kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest, and the wheat harvest. So one is Passover and the other one is Pentecost. And that's why they read this at Pentecost, Ruth.
So it's over 50 days?
Yeah. So 50 days. Well, he says that's what the Hebrews are saying, right? I mean, the Hebrews will read Ruth during Pentecost. And that's Pentecost is also called, anybody another name? Feast of Weeks. Well, go ahead.
Weeks.
Yeah, and why is it called Feast of Weeks?
I don't know.
Because there were how many weeks? Seven.
Yeah, 7 weeks. So you're saying 7 weeks in one day. And so Penta means 50. And that's Greek, not Hebrew. You're right. That's right. The Feast of Weeks. And verse 1. Then, let's set time. Okay, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek for thee a place of rest in which it may be well with thee? Now, therefore, is not Boaz of our... You know, so she's trying to say, I need to take care of Ruth. Because she's an older widow. And what happens if I die? What's going to happen to Ruth in a Hebrew country? Now, therefore, is not Boaz of our kinsman, our Gala, and whose maids thou hast been? Lo, he is winnowing a barley threshing floor tonight. Thou wilt therefore bathe thee. Now, this is good.
Take a bath.
Yeah. Bathe thee and anoint thee and put thine apparel upon thee and go down to the threshing floor. Do not make thyself known to the man until he hath done eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lieth down that thou shalt mark the place where he doth lie and hath go in and turn aside the covering of his feet and lay thee down and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Isn't that cool?
And heat his feet up.
Yeah. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest will I do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was glad, he went in to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. Now this is a tough job. You know, we go home. And this is, he's lay right there. Got work in the morning. Then came she and softly and turned aside the covering of his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass in the middle of the night that the man startled up and turned, and lo,
so it was down there. Best dream
ever. That's to say.
A woman at his feet.
A woman lying at his feet. What the heck? And he said, you know, have you ever done that with an animal and they're getting crouched a little bit and all of a sudden like, what the heck? What's something down there?
I was going to check all the time.
He said, who art thou? And she said, I am Ruth. And this is so great. I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy wing over thy handmaid. For a kinsman thou art. And that girl will take care of me. And that's the other place with the wing.
Naomi said that.
Yeah. No, Ruth? Yeah.
Earlier.
Yeah, that's right. Naomi said, Yahweh
will spread.
Let me see where that is. Let's go back to 2:12. Yahweh recompense thy deed and let thy reward be full from Yahweh. Oh, this is Boaz saying this. Yahweh recompense thy deed and let thy reward be full from Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, unto whom thou hast come to take refuge under his wings. And so we're all under Yahweh's wing, and now she's trying to get, she wants Boaz to put her under his wings. In verse 10, chapter 3, and he said, blessed be thou of Yahweh, my daughter, for thou hast made thy last loving kindness better than the first, and not following after young men, whether poor or rich. Now therefore, my daughter, do not fear. Whatsoever thou shalt say, I will do for thee, for all the gate of my people doth know that a virtuous woman thou art. And so she proposed.
Yeah,
that's good. I mean, what a great, I mean, what better relationship with people would I have, you know, I can give you, and what you have you can give me, because she's going to give him a son. Now obviously he's a bachelor, and she's
the
a hot
bloodline of the Redeemer.
Okay, chapter 4, you can read the rest of it, but we're kind of running out of time. Verse 8. Yeah, we're not going to be able to do all this. Well, I'm going to kind of sum up and then we'll read as far as we can before 10 o'clock. Let's go to... Or not 10 o'clock.
I thought you were just making a joke.
Okay, go to chapter 4, verse 16. We've only got about 8 minutes left. And so they get married. Great situation. And Naomi's going to be taken care of also. So Yahweh's now, she has been exalted. And Naomi took the boy, had a baby, and she became his nurse. And the woman, her neighbors, gave him a name, saying, there is born a son to Naomi. And why is it a son to Naomi? Because Boaz is going to buy back her husband's land. All right, and she's Obed, and his son's going to be really the son of her husband, or her sons, Naomi's husband and sons, because he's the firstborn, and so that will be his land, Naomi's husband's land, their first child, which is so cool. Because now Naomi's blessed, because now she's got an heir who can help take care of her too when she gets older.
Yeah, she can retire.
Yeah. And there is born a son to Naomi, and they call his name Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And then it goes to the genealogy. And the genealogy is very interesting. Because we're going to start off with Judah. Mm-hmm. And Judah, remember, his sons didn't have any, all his sons died. Mm-hmm. And he had sexual intercourse with Tamara, who had Perez. So this is the Christ line. Now let's just start watching this Christ line. Yeah. So Perez is the Christ line. And that was really, you know, Judah, unbeknownst to him, had sexual intercourse with his daughter-in-law because she wouldn't give him any sons.
He thought she was a prostitute.
Yeah, but he withheld her sons. Two of them died, and they did the same thing with the kinsman redeemer. And their brothers married her, you know. And then the third one, he thought this woman's none like Yahweh. So it was really good because it says all the sons hated Yahweh. Now, Perez, if you look under here.
Under where?
Verse 18. I'm not going to go to each one. And in verse 21, we're going to go right into Solomon. Solomon married Rahab. And so Rahab now is part of the Christ line. So you have Tamar and Perez, Solomon, who was a relative of Aaron, married Rahab, the harlot from Jericho. Boaz marries a Moabitess, and who gives him Ruth, which gives him Obed, Jesse, David, and where does Solomon come from?
Bathsheba.
Oh, yeah.
Bathsheba, she was the wife of Uriah.
Wow. David murdered him.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at just boom, 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 boom. And so when you're looking at the forgiveness in all these situations that Yahweh is teaching us, and for the people in the dung being exalted, Rahab being exalted to the Christland, you know, Tamar being exalted to the Christ line. You've got Ruth being exalted to the Christ line. Bathsheba to the Christ line. So, this book, Ruth, obviously was not written until after David. So, Boaz and Ruth and Naomi know nothing of this record. That their life is actually going to become part of the Bible. And that, look how many times that can be part of our lives too. That we're doing things, that you're living righteously and doing what Yahweh tells you, another generation or two generations or 100 generations later, somebody has just come out from your fruit of what you did, and so their fruit, they got a book. They didn't know that David is going to be, the Yahweh chooses David as the Christ line, and now their family is part of the Messiah. Wow. I think we'll just stop right there. Finish reading the book of Ruth, and the story is very good.
It sounds like Ruth became a son to Naomi since she had no son.
Yeah, very good.
So she was, I'm going to be the son that'll take care of
you. She was gleaning, and Naomi wasn't gleaning. I'm not sure why, unless she was on another field or doing something like that. But yeah, you're right.
She's too old.
But this real, you never know, but yeah, it appears that way.
She's new.
But then, happily ever after, a busted the same. So, okay, so we'll go ahead. Not bad. We'll go ahead and hear from our Father to the people who are watching. Word of prophecy according to 1 Corinthians 14. Thank you, Father, for these words, for the people who are listening now and in the future. As you put my word on and as you meditate and let the word sink deeply into your pores, know that my word will bring life to your very marrow and bones. It will bring life into your soul in order that you may manifest my goodness and my life and show the world, as it was said tonight, from darkness unto yellow. And where they can be excited about seeing real life that stands out that will go ahead and bless them and that they want to emulate and they want some part of that. So you are commanded to put your life in that perspective, to meditate in my word and to eat it and digest it and live it in its full capacity, and you shall be a manifestation of my son